Are you using your phone, or is it using you? Rise above mass surveillance and discover a phone that protects your privacy and communications.
Above Phone does everything your old phone does, without tracking you, while giving you complete control over your phone and apps. We are better than big tech. It works with any cell service. No forced logins. No advertising or tracking. Download apps privately. Control your phone and its apps. Secure hardware.
Be sure to purchase Above Suite, our private communications and productivity suite that's run on our data center. You receive a VPN, email, calendar, video conferencing, encrypted chat, internet phone, and a search engine.
Don't worry if you're new. Every phone includes a free call with a real person to help you switch. You also get free email and chat support, free guides and video courses. We can take back our technology. We're here to help with tools and education. You have the power.
Rise above with Above Phone.
AbovePhone.com.
Welcome.
Free Thought Project Podcast.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Hello again, Freethinkers. Welcome back to the Free Thought Project podcast. My name is Jason Bassler, and joining me is the Free Thought Project editor-in-chief, Matt Agarist. Mr. Agarist, what's up, my dude? It was a crazy week news-wise, and we certainly have a lot to talk about today. How you doing today, my brother?
Great, man. Better than the economy, better than cryptocurrency, and better than Roger Ver, man, unfortunately. I know we're going to get into that, and we have the perfect person to talk about it on today.
Yeah, seriously, man. Well, it seems to, been perfectly aligned, even though we didn't plan it this way. And, you know, I know the last few podcasts, I've spent maybe too much time talking about our new children's book. So I'm not going to do that today, but I did just want to mention that we did just launch a few weeks ago a brand new children's book called Little Free Thinkers Know Your Rights. If you guys are interested in learning more, go to our new website, littlefreethinkers.com. The book seems to be selling well. We've received some great feedback from people who bought it, and I'm proud of how it turned out. I think Matt is as well. But we have a lot to talk to our guests about today, so I won't focus on the promotion too much. But I did want to say one other thing that we probably don't mention enough, which is, guys, if you listen to this show and enjoy it, please, please, please not only subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or Podbean, but please rate and review it. The way these algorithms work with these platforms is that the more positive reviews and ratings a podcast has, the more it's suggested to people who aren't already following it. So it's absolutely crucial for the success and future of this podcast. And, you know, Matt and myself put a lot of hard work into these interviews. We try to get some of the sharpest thinkers, some of the most relevant guests on the show. So we could really use your help in boosting our signal. And we are aware that there's thousands, if not millions, of other podcasts out there. And, you know, we've been doing this podcast for a while now. I think it's been like 5 years. Occasionally, Matt and myself need a little motivation. We need a little inspiration to know we're on the right track. So if you do enjoy what we're doing here, just please let us know. Leave a comment in the post or on our Instagram account. Send us a message, or more importantly, just share it with others. You know, sometimes it's these types of market signals that let us know that we're meeting the consumer demand. And one last thing that I will mention before we get started today is seeing, you know, the guests and the topic we'll be talking about is aligned with a new book that I put out. I wanted to remind everyone that I did just last year in September published a new ebook entitled Three Ways to Prepare for CBDCs, which explains, you know, three solid ways to prepare, plan, and really just get ahead of the curve of the rollout of these central bank digital currencies. So you could check out that book on Amazon, or it's on my own website, jasonbassler.com. If you message me or leave a comment in the post, I'll definitely send you a code for 15% off. So check that out. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest who I'm elated to talk to today. We've had him scheduled for earlier in the year as a guest, but it ended up not working out. So we have him here with us today. The timing really couldn't be better. As we just mentioned, a few things have transpired over the past few days. So our guest today is an entrepreneur. He's an investor, a writer, a longtime crypto advocate, I would say an expert on CBDCs, and a somewhat new fellow at the Brownstone Institute, which was founded just a couple of years ago in 2021 by one of my favorite modern thinkers, Jeffrey Tucker. So our guest today is Mr. Aaron Day. Now, Aaron, we were just joking about how lit this podcast was going to be today, seeing some of the recent developments over the past few days. And of course, we'll jump into that immediately. But I wanted to ask you, you know, first of all, like, how you doing today? But second of all, what has your experience been like working with Mr. Tucker over there at the Brownstone Institute?
I'm doing you know, great today, all things being equal. And actually, I mean, this is the fight that I signed up for. So I, over kind of a year and a half ago, I realized the CBDC threat, and that's what my 100% time is spent doing. But working with Jeffrey is great. I've known Jeffrey for 10 years in various capacities, doing various think tank stuff back when I was at, you know, the Atlas Society, and he was at Fee and everything else. So we've kind of known each other informally for a long time. And you know, and it turns out what he's built at the Brownstone Institute basically is the only game in town if you want to speak the truth, specifically since the COVID lockdown era. So he is phenomenal to work with. And what he's built there is basically an oasis for people that have been fired, lost their jobs, you know, targeted for speaking the truth. And it's the most incredible group of people, the fellows. And they're not necessarily even coming from the same ideological place. And what I think is fascinating about it is there are a lot of people being onboarded to the idea that, you know, maybe government isn't here to serve our best interests. And a lot of people that for the first time, because of COVID, are now completely reexamining the role of the state. So it's been actually a pleasure. And I love hanging out with Jeffrey, not only through the Brownstone Institute, but also just socially. He's a great guy to hang around with.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that COVID certainly did produce. You know, it produced a lot more anarchists, maybe more so than even the Mises Institute. But Jeffrey was great on COVID. You know, I was following all of his work and tweets and everything he had to say on the topic. And I'm a huge fan of his writing. I own several of his books. Matt and I actually saw him speak in San Diego a decade ago now, which blows my mind. And I don't think I've ever seen that guy not wearing a suit and a bow tie. So yeah, he's always very classy, always keeps it professional. But so yeah, as I alluded to in the opening, you know, we have a lot to talk about, but a very specific topic that recently transpired, and that's the arrest of our mutual friend, Roger Ver. Now, we were supposed to have Roger on the podcast about a month ago because he's been extremely supportive of our work at the Freethought Project. He even subscribes to my Instagram account, has reached out a couple times with words of encouragement. So I got a little bravery in me and I asked him to come on the show. And at the time, he was in South Korea. So we got the time zones mixed up. We ended up missing him, but we had agreed to reschedule for a later date, which I'm kind of doubtful will happen anytime soon now. But I know you recently interviewed him, and I wanted to talk about that at some point during the show. But here's a little context for those who aren't familiar with Roger on the recent allegations. So Roger was probably one of the very first vocal advocates of Bitcoin way back when it launched in the early 2010s. He was even dubbed Bitcoin Jesus, which I don't know how he feels about that nickname or whatever. But he was very evangelical with his approach and his gospel about the technology. And he is a Bitcoin billionaire with a B. I know there's lots of Bitcoin millionaires, but he is one of the only Bitcoin billionaires that I know of. And the story goes, like, somewhere around 2014, he renounced his U.S. citizenship, which allegedly subjected him to U.S. tax laws, including reporting capital gains from the sale of his assets worldwide, including Bitcoin. And he was supposed to be paying an exit tax on those gains, which to me is completely asinine and criminal in itself. Apparently in 2017, he sold 70,000 Bitcoins for around $240 million. Despite him not being a U.S. citizen at the time, the IRS claims he was still legally obligated to report to the IRS and pay taxes on all that, which he allegedly failed to do. So the IRS claimed a loss of $48 million to their criminal racket, and subsequently he was arrested 2 days ago in Spain, and the U.S. is likely going to seek extradition for him to stand a trial in the U.S. So you recently said in a tweet, within 48 hours, the DOJ went after Roger Ver and Kim.com. This is not an accident. They're coming for all of us next. CBDC's incoming, DEFCON 1. And I agree, it indeed feels like there has been a coordinated attack on crypto over the past few years with the Biden administration cracking down. But I wanted to ask you, Aaron, do you believe that this is a start to a larger targeting campaign?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing targeting campaign. And, you know, so what happened on my end, I mean, I've been a political activist for a long time, and I won't go into all the background on that. I gave up on politics in 2018. But I got into Bitcoin in 2012. I learned about it from Ian Freeman and Mark Edge at Free Talk Live and Roger Ver right at around the same time. So that's when I started using Bitcoin and was actually using it for day-to-day purchases until 2017, when all of a sudden it became expensive to use and slow. And it was essentially, as Roger wrote about in his book, Hijacked. I apologize. I was about to go off the. What was the original question? Because I was about to go off on a tangent. I realized I want to catch myself.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, I was just wondering if you thought this was like the start to a larger targeting campaign. But you're right. Like Ian Freeman's already been swept up in this and numerous other people.
Yes. Okay. So I exited politics and then I actually exited activism. I went off on kind of my own personal inward journey for about 4 years. And then COVID happened. And in 2019, I exited fiat completely. So I've been living off of off of crypto, gold, and silver exclusively since 2019. So after I saw what happened with COVID, and then I started to see friends of mine in New Hampshire that are also free staters like Ian Freeman and Jeremy Kaufman from Library get targeted by the government, I started to look into, well, why is this happening? Because, you know, is it really a threat? Is what Ian's doing really a threat? Okay, maybe he runs $10 million worth of Bitcoin ATMs in New Hampshire. But that, at the end of the day, given the amount of time and resources they put into it, it didn't really make sense. Well, I mean, why would you make an example of them unless there was a bigger context? So I started studying what's going on with CBDCs. And what I found was horrifying. And I dropped everything that I was doing. I wrote a book called The Final Countdown and actually ran for president as a Republican specifically to try to bring awareness to the CBDC issue to try to get into the debates. So I'll end really quickly what the status of CBDCs is right now and then how it relates to Roger. So in 2020, there were 35 countries just at the stage of really researching CBDCs, with the exception of China, which started their research in 2014. So 35 countries in 2020. Fast forward to today, there are 134 countries pursuing CBDCs. There are 1.3 billion global CBDC accounts today. It dwarfs all of decentralized crypto. This is just in 2 years. More alarmingly, what I found was that the United States has conducted 3 successful CBDC pilots. So when you listen to the news, you'll hear Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, say, well, we don't even know if we're going to look into this.
Right.
That's what he's saying publicly. They started these pilots in 2020. These are advanced stage pilots. So the first pilot is called Project Hamilton, and it's a retail CBDC meant to replace, you know, cash, what we use for day-to-day purchases. This pilot was conducted between MIT Multimedia Lab, more on that later, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. And they completed it, and this system can handle about 1.7 million transactions per second. And before I bore everybody with numbers, I just want to put this into perspective. BTC, Bitcoin, BTC can do 7 transactions per second. The existing financial system can do, you know, whatever, 80 to 100,000 transactions per second. If you're looking at Visa, MasterCard, that kind of thing. This thing is at 1.7 million transactions per second. And at the conclusion of this pilot, they said, we have a few technical bugs to work out, but the real issue moving forward is to figure out legality and market it, which of course to me just screams they're waiting for a crisis to bring it out. So that's CBDC pilot number one. CBDC pilot number two is called Project Cedar. Mm-hmm. It is a collaboration between MIT, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and a number of other financial institutions in and around. And the third pilot is the most dystopian of them all, and almost no one has heard of it. It's called Regulated Liability Network, RLN. And this is essentially one ledger, a common ledger, that tracks all CBDCs, all central bank digital currencies, and all other digital assets. So imagine at some point in the future, well, you shouldn't have to imagine. The IRS has already now said you're going to have to report your self-custody crypto holdings. But imagine a future where you have to register and KYC onto this common ledger all of your decentralized crypto assets. But the more frightening part about it is they're looking at – people talk about real-world tokenization, taking stocks and bonds and tokenizing your house and all of your physical assets and tokenizing them. Well, imagine all of those things on a common ledger linked to your CBDCs where multiple third parties can monitor and program and censor your transactions. That is Regulated Liability Network. That was started in the fourth quarter of last year. Now, I've talked to developers that worked on Project Hamilton, and I have somebody talking to somebody who's working on it currently. I have been told that they're now up to almost 1.9 million transactions per second for Project Hamilton, and that the intention is to roll it out in conjunction with Regulated Liability Network. So understand, because a lot of us in the Liberty community, a lot of us in the crypto community, we get caught up with this idea that it's this coin versus that coin, and we've lost the plot. We're competing with central banks. We're competing with traditional finance. When I got my first Bitcoin in 2012, it was a magical experience. I mean, I remember it. Like, it was fast, it was cheap, and there was no third party. So it was actually better, faster, cheaper money. Since 2012, you have to keep in mind, Zelle, Venmo, Apple Pay, Google Pay, FedNow, none of these things existed at that point. So now traditional finance has created cheaper, easier to use experiences. And while we've been having coin wars, they built a CBDC, a dystopian CBDC, that's literally waiting for an emergency to be ushered in. Now, if you have any questions about that, because I'm going to launch into another part.
Yeah, well, you said coin wars, and it made me think of Max Kaiser's tweet today where he was celebrating Roger's arrest.
Right? Yeah.
I kind of had Max on a little bit of a pedestal. You know, he's been a proponent for Bitcoin for a very long time, and he actually hates all. He's one of the lead proponents of coin wars, right? But he then accused Roger of being like the person who tried to hijack Bitcoin, right? And as you know, Roger wrote a book where it was called Hijacking Bitcoin, where he tried to call out who was hijacking Bitcoin. And I'm not sure where you were going next, but maybe it's related to this. And I was just wondering, like, one of two things. Like, what do you think of Max saying such bullshit, you know, supporting the state acting against Roger Ver in any capacity, you know, especially even if he allegedly didn't pay his taxes on this income? So what, right?
Yep.
And do you think that that Roger's arrest is related to this information that he was trying to get out about the actual hijacking of Bitcoin?
Yeah. So Max's comments are despicable, and I'll happy to talk about that in a second. So where I'm going to go is this. So understand, these three pilots are done. So I've written this book where I outline the state of CBDCs, and I had moved away from BTC simply because I live off of crypto and BTC doesn't work. I'm not picking something. You know, it's like, you know, the narrative now is BTC is digital gold and you're supposed to hold it and not spend it. I have to pay my bills, and I can't live using cost-effectively BTC. So I've been using other coins anyway because of the utility of those coins. Mm-hmm. But so I wrote my book and I found out these connections. So MIT is involved in all three of these US CBDC pilots. Now comes in Roger's book. So Roger talks about the hijacking of Bitcoin, which happened right around 2017. It started before that, but really kind of the coup and the whole narrative shift from Bitcoin being peer-to-peer digital cash to digital gold really, you know, was cemented in 2017. Now, what Roger talks about in his book, and, you know, I would have thought, given how Roger had been treated by people like Max, as you see in the comments today, that the book might have been him ranting a bit. It might have been him airing his personal experience. There's nothing like that in the book. The book is completely factual, and most of the quotes and most of the voices that come through in the book are actually from BTC vet devs and from the people on the other side. So there's not a lot of commentary from Roger. It's all factually based. And what he shows conclusively is that Bitcoin was hijacked. It was intentionally kept to be small blocks, and that a company, Blockstream, which is now the company that funds the core developers, intentionally left it small so that they can build what are called second layer solutions that they can then sell in the marketplace. So there's a very specific financial reason for them to do it, but it gets worse. And this is the part that I connected with Roger, and I don't know that he had necessarily been following these pieces, not to get too much into the weeds, but, you know, up until about 2015, Bitcoin devs had been funded largely by a group called the Bitcoin Foundation, which was a nonprofit that had a bunch of different community members. Roger was one of the founders. Gavin Andreessen, who was the developer that Satoshi Nakamoto handed the keys over to, it ran into some difficulties in 2015. So it turns out the group that came in to do the funding and the direct the development of BTC in 2015 was none other than the MIT Multimedia Lab, the same group that worked on all three CBDC pilots. And in fact, it gets worse. It's one guy in particular named Joy Ito, who was the chair of the MIT Multimedia Lab, who did the following. He funded all three of the CBDC projects. He funded Lightning Network. He funded SegWit, which are the two changes that kind of kept, I would say, throttled Bitcoin at 7 transactions per second. So one guy is simultaneously making it so that Bitcoin can't be used as peer-to-peer cash, while at the same time working with the Federal Reserve banks of New York and Boston to build a digital currency for the United States government and the Federal Reserve. One more twist onto that is this gentleman happened to take funding from Jeffrey Epstein for both the MIT Multimedia Lab and for his private ventures that are related to the funding of, it looks like, Lightning Network and SegWit. And Jeffrey Epstein himself did an interview in 2017 where he said he believes that Bitcoin is not a currency and that it's a store of value, basically furthering this notion of that Bitcoin shouldn't be used for peer-to-peer cash. So the answer to the question, do I think these things are related? I think they're entirely related, because what Roger's doing is bringing into the consciousness something that 99% of Americans aren't aware of. I've gone to 20 states over the last 18 months giving talks about CBDCs, doing workshops. And I ask people when I go into different sections, whether I'm talking about crypto or whatever, more people in the general public have heard of Sam Bankman-Fried than Satoshi Nakamoto. Most people don't even know that using cryptocurrency as money is a use case. The overwhelming majority of Americans, in my experience traveling throughout the country, only know of it as a speculative investment. So within crypto, people are like, oh, we solved this or we resolved this in 2017. And that just simply isn't true. The entire world has been completely blocked off from this discussion. So I read Roger's book and I had scheduled the interview with him. I wanted enough time. I scheduled it probably around the time that you did, but I wanted to I wanted to interview him after I had a chance to read the book so I could, you know, have an intelligent conversation about it. And, you know, I think the realization that he and I are both coming to, kind of connecting these different pieces, is that this is more of a coordinated effort than people think. And the Department of Justice turns out to be involved. I'm doing an interview tonight with a guy named Stephen Nerioff, who was, he created the utility token. He's a lawyer. He has a bunch of patents. He created the first security token. He was there at the founding of Ethereum. And he actually instructed them on how to do a legal token sale. They didn't take his advice, so he left the project, didn't take any tokens. And I won't go into all the details, but basically to shut him up, the DOJ threatened him with a trumped up extortion charge, and told him that unless he ratted out pro-liberty members of the crypto community, he'd never see his kids again. So this is 2017 to 2019 timeframe, and I have what I'm going to talk to him about in my interview today is who all's on that list. I already know Naomi Brockwell is on that list. I know Roger Ver is on that list. I know Patrick Byrne is on that list. And what I'm trying to say is, when I say DEF CON 1, I mean it. I mean 6 months is what I think that we have. And, like, you know, obviously we had a lot of factions in the Liberty community, but if we don't unite against this CBDC threat, I mean, they are throwing us all in jail. I'm sick of going to sentencing hearings for friends. I mean, I'm here in New Hampshire, and there's that movie Four Weddings and a Funeral. And, I kind of joke, well, if you're in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, it's four hearings and, you know, pork fest, right? Like, it's crazy how this happens, but it's coming. Now they're going after Jack Dorsey. They're going after Lightning Network. And let's be very clear. They went after Roger because they're doing chain analysis. And so your audience probably is aware, but a lot of people weren't in the early days. In the early days of Bitcoin, people actually thought it was anonymous and fully encrypted and private. And that's not true. It's pseudonymous, and actually the transactions are all stored on a public ledger. Well, it turns out all of these companies have sprouted up that are partnering with the government, where now they're tracking everybody's transactions. And now you add AI on top of that, then anybody that's interacted with an exchange or had a touch point with something connected to fiat currency can be identified. So I suspect looming, there could be any number. There could be a mass filing a mass movement of the IRS weaponizing this chain analytics and AI to completely shut the doors. But if you look at where we are, there are like two exchanges left. Both of those exchanges are being sued. Local Bitcoins was shut down. They're now saying, I think the FBI came out and said, if you buy crypto from a service that's not a registered money transmitter, then if some of the coins that were pooled that they sold turn out to be illegal, they can claw back and confiscate all of the coins. The IRS has said you have to report self-custody crypto. Lightning Network hosted solutions, hosted wallets are all being shut down in the United States right now, voluntarily, but in anticipation of what this stuff means. Coin mixing services like Tornado Cash and Samurai Wallet and so forth, the founders have been arrested, the services are being shut down. So this is a complete and total coordinated shutdown, and it's not a conspiracy. It's Executive Order 14067 that Biden signed on March the 9th, 2022, authorizing two things. One, a whole of government approach to regulating all digital assets, and the authorization for the exploration of a central bank digital currency. So none of this is now a mystery or a conspiracy, but the part about that connecting Roger and talking to this guy, Steve Nerioff, tonight and talking to others, what I found is I believe there has been a coordinated effort out of the DOJ to specifically target pro-liberty crypto leaders. And we're not aware of it.
Right, right. It definitely seems like the Biden administration is hell-bent on destroying crypto. In fact, you know, that's not really been a secret. They've been talking about creating new taxation, new regulations for it for years now. And Yeah, I appreciate all the bigger context there. There's a lot of stuff I actually just learned, and I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on the CBDC world as well. I didn't even know about the phase three being in effect. I'd never heard of this Joy Ito character. And it seems like, you know, as Whitney Webb has documented through her research, like Jeffrey Epstein was very much connected to the technocratic state and promoting that and pushing that as much as he could. In fact, I want to get into some of Whitney's work here in a few minutes with one of her questions. But that oversight, that overview you just gave us, it really kind of connects the dots. And I must admit, I had some anxiety, you know, reading about Roger's arrest. It seemed like somebody, you know, who I was just interacting with, you know, it was just kind of hit me square in the face. Like, wow, this is really happening right now. And I don't believe that you're exaggerating with the context you just gave us when you were saying, you know, DEFCON 1. It definitely seems like things are ramping up and escalating quickly. So, yeah, as I mentioned, I did a lot of reading about Roger's case, and I found a few of these quotes that confirm what you're saying, which one is from Kim.com. He says, "This indictment has nothing to do with tax evasion. This is a malicious attempt to vilify Roger and to punish him for exposing and opposing the crimes of the U.S. empire." And I know former podcast guest Sal Mayweather, Sal the Agorist, you know, he was saying the same exact thing. Like, this is what Roger Ver has done. You know, he's been one of the most based and logically, morally consistent anarchists within the cryptosphere for years, you know. And then there was another quote here. "The U.S. is aggressively coming after crypto. Just look at the recent targets. If you think you're not a target, think again. They'll come after all of us at some point. We have to fight." And that was from David Scherz, who is a notable crypto expert. But as you pointed out, you know, another former guest on this show, John McAfee, was also arrested and caged by Spanish authorities. And of course, you know, most know his story. He was found dead in a cell, and the circumstances surrounding his death are, you know, ominous and suspicious, including the fact that there is just no pictures that exist of his deceased body. So I guess, like, do you fear that Roger will kind of succumb to the same treatment, or do you think he'll actually make it to the U.S.?
So there's actually quite a bit in there. And I do want to say this. I am doing a DEFCON 1 podcast. I'm going to tell everybody to watch this. I mean, this is not, like, I don't make any money doing this. I put my life on this. And right now I'm doing a podcast next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, where I'm going to lay out all of this, including all of the actions that are currently going on just in the last 2 weeks on crypto. Because when you see that, there's no doubt, there's no conspiracy. We're in the later stages now. There's not much left for them to do. Banning coins and just completely cutting the, you know, on and off ramps. But I mean, at this point, it's so KYC, it doesn't even matter, right? We're at the final stages of this. And so, I'm going to go through and do that. But as to whether Roger's situation, obviously it's politically motivated. And as you said, I was talking to him at the same time. He was in South Korea, and we actually scheduled the thing for when he was going to be in Dubai, and we also had a time zone mixed up, but fortunately I was able to fill an hour I waited for him and filled an hour. And so we were able to do the interview. But consider this. So, you know, being in the Free State and having had a lot of friends that have either been arrested or targeted by the FBI, you know, it's expensive to surveil someone and to monitor them and to have law enforcement ready to pick them up. To my knowledge, and I haven't found it yet, Roger had not publicized that he was even going to be in Spain. So this means that they were surveilling him enough to know that they're tracking all of his movements until such time as he was in a country that had favorable extradition laws and had enough time to coordinate with the authorities in Spain to arrest him. So this was something where like they're tracking this guy, trying to nab him. And to me, there's no doubt it's political. So let's be clear about this. He's being charged with tax fraud on something that's 10 years old. So do we think it's a coincidence that 2 weeks after he launches a book that essentially exposes, as we start to detail and unravel this, a combination of the traditional banking sector and the government being involved in hijacking Bitcoin while simultaneously preparing a CBDC, and he puts out a book that look, when I was probably one of the first to review it online, and I got a ton of reach on that post. And I was blocked by all of the main BTC devs. I was blocked by and people involved with Blockstream. Adam Back, who's the CEO of Blockstream, at the group that's funding the BTC devs, he blocked me immediately. He saw my post, wrote a response, blocked, and then blocked me. Samson Mao, the number two person at Blockstream, blocked me. Michael Saylor blocked me. So this book is dangerous because I've been defending it, and I've even put together memes. I've gone through the book three times. I've actually checked the references. I've put together some memes based on some of it just to try to make the information more digestible. No one has refuted any of the factual claims in the book. So at this point in time, there are two interesting things to think about. One, yes, I think the timing is beyond suspicious, but there are tweets circulating around that one of the founders of Blockstream had publicly threatened to report Roger to the IRS years ago. So Blockstream, when you read the book, Roger's like, yeah, these guys did all kinds of tactics, propaganda, censorship, even using denial of services attacks, threats to miners if they didn't vote to keep Bitcoin the way that it was, to basically destroy their business or reduce their access to customers. All kinds of things are written about in this book. Well, if those are the tactics, and then it just turns out the guy gets arrested in a foreign country where no one knows he was going to be there on these charges, we know what this is about. And so it's frightening. Now, I mean, I don't want to go down the, like, John McAfee path. I mean, they're a little different, obviously, the circumstances. I mean, you know, Roger wasn't like, you know, in the open seas on a boat with a whole gang of people with guns and everything, like, you know,
wanted for murder.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't even known, right? It's not like we knew there was some warrant out for his arrest or that things had been filed. And so clearly it's contrived, and I believe it's contrived to reduce it, to crush the credibility of this book. So from my perspective, there are two things that are going to happen, and I'll talk about kind of the formal thing next week. But I put together a community on X called Free Roger to get people together in a group, because we've got to be vigilant on this. I'd like to find some people in Spain, find people to navigate what is the prison system like there, get somebody on the ground to make sure we find out what's going on and where even he is, and to continue to spread information about this. I mean, that is just a critical thing to do at this point in time. But the other thing to do is I'm pushing his book as much as I can. But on top of that, I'm just going to continue to put content out from the book, factual, bite-sized pieces, but maybe in the form of memes. Hey, if you guys want to help out with that, you guys are better at memes than anyone. But if there's a way to take some of these real core ideas and facts that he has and get them out, because I believe that's what people are trying to suppress.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And I mean, this is a serious situation, right? This is not, you just said like you think that this is coming in 6 months, right? And that may sound alarmist or whatever to people, but it's right there in plain sight. And the people rolling this out aren't hiding it at all. Right. The Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, which is most people know it as SWIFT, which is the largest international money and security transferring protocol in the world. They announced just a couple of months ago, right, that they're planning a new platform possibly as soon as 12/24, meaning in December of this year, right, to connect the wave of central bank digital currencies that are now in development by over 90% of all the banks in the whole world. Like, that's fucking crazy. This is real stuff, man. This is where the government can turn off your bank account instantly. You can't have cash or any of that. So
no, my
question to you is, like, considering this trajectory, right, of all these global banks getting on board, how do you think that this is going to look? How do you anticipate that the governments of the world might leverage misinformation or coercive tactics to try to get people to embrace the CBDCs?
Sure. So first, again, to be clear, there are actually technically a couple of different ways we could get a CBDC. One is Project Hamilton, which again is ongoing. So it's just because they have no obligation. It's not an open source project. So they stopped reporting in 2022, but they didn't stop work. So that technology is ready. So understand the current situation is they built the technology and the president of the United States has signed an executive order authorizing this. So now, how will something like this get rolled out? Well, I mean, you know, anybody that's sitting there saying, oh, gee, Americans wouldn't stand up for that. I want to add a couple things. First of all, we get these things in an emergency. We got the Patriot Act 45 days after 9/11. We got TARP 18 days after Lehman Brothers collapsed. And we got the $2.2 trillion CARES Act 16 days after COVID was declared a pandemic on a voice vote. Some of the people in Congress were there to vote on all three of these things, right? These are all three horrible pieces of legislation, and they all contain surveillance stuff. I mean, COVID has contact tracing and, you know, facial recognition and everything else. And the TARP Act actually had bank secrecy stuff that, you know, actually added some of the KYC and AML stuff. So like we get these gigantic, you know, surveillance things passed in these emergencies. Well, so what kind of emergency? Now, when I ran for president, I got the opportunity to do a couple things. One, I got Vivek Ramaswamy to read my book, and I had three conversations with him about it. And he actually is the one who pushed Trump to come out against CBDCs because it was in New Hampshire where I am, and it looked like it was going to be a close primary and everything else. And so, to me, that's worthless. Trump saying he's not going to do CBDCs isn't meaningful. But this is some of the more interesting aspects of this. So I spoke with Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz has put forward now the same bill twice. And all the bill says is he's trying to get people to sign a bill that says we will not allow the Federal Reserve to act unilaterally to pass a CBDC. Well, I mean, based on the Constitution, you shouldn't even have to get that bill passed. Because that's not the purview of the Federal Reserve. You know, the creation of money is a congressional function. Nevertheless, he couldn't even get a vote on the bill in 2023. And he told me when I met with him, there's a 0% chance this thing is going to be signed. There's no opposition in the United States Congress to a CBDC. Obviously, with what we've seen with the expansion of NSA, $100 billion worth of new spending overseas, banning TikTok, right? Like, actually, to me, the last 2 weeks, I have a queasier feeling in my stomach from the last 2 weeks than I did after 9/11 and TARP and CARES. Like, because it's just like, it's overwhelming what they're actually doing, and nobody knows and nobody cares. So what is the perfect thing to bring in CBDCs? People are already mostly not using cash anyway. People are already mostly using these electronic forms of payment. A terror attack, a cyber attack, it'll get bipartisan support. They'll come in and they'll say, listen, if we don't do this, terrorists are going to kill us. We have to keep you safe. And so there's not even going to be a carrot model. This isn't going to be a we're going to roll this out in a phased approach, and we're going to use a carrot, and we're going to say something like, for every dollar you have in the bank, we'll give you $1.2 worth of CBDC. They're going to roll it all out at once in an emergency. And if you look at the state of the world, you look at the geopolitical situation, the economic situation, the domestic situation, I wait every day. Which is it going to be? Is it going to be a false flag or is it going to be an actual thing? But what's it going to be? A Kent State type event on a college campus? A cyber attack?
Dollar crash?
Or a dollar crash, which, by the way, is inevitable, right? Like every fiat currency in human history has failed. Yeah. They typically only last 27 years. And if you look at the seven reasons fiat currencies fail, you know, everything from competition to technology to economic mismanagement, inflation, overexpenditure on military, the U.S. is blinking bright red on all seven of the normal reasons a fiat currency has failed. And we have gone from being backed by gold, to being backed by nothing, to not even having fractional reserves. They waived the 10% reserve requirement under COVID emergency, and they never brought it back, which means when if you're going to your bank trying to take money out, you're relying on commercial real estate, residential real estate, student loans, auto loans, and credit cards to be paid on time, which they aren't, because these are already asset classes are already starting to reach 2008 default levels. So it's going to collapse. My view is it's a controlled demolition because they already know what the solution is on the other side. I think we actually have to collapse it faster. What I, my political campaign was, I wrote something called the Bank Run Manifesto, but if you've seen my shirt, it says bank run now, halt CBDC, stop World War III, end the Fed. That's it. 2 to 3% of people pull their money out early, not just pull it out. This isn't about cash. This is about exchanging fiat currency for self-custody crypto, gold, and silver, and starting to use it in a parallel economy. 2 to 3%, based on how fragile and over-leveraged the system is, will bring it down before they have the opportunity to have a controlled kind of, you know, Hollywood-type narrative where here's the emergency and everybody's fearful and here they come to save the day with an emergency piece of legislation with CBDC attached to it.
Yeah, never let a good crisis go to waste, right?
Yep.
And I think that's exactly what's happening here. like you had just mentioned, with all these, since 9/11, the states rolled out dystopian legislation on the backs of the people's fear, right? And no one was able to stop it. And all of this dystopian legislation was passed with bipartisan support, you know, short of just a couple of politicians that, you know, voiced their you know, their opposition to it. And short of like Florida, you know, the Florida governor saying that they're promising to fight CBDCs if they come out, I think both the left and the right will both cave in if there's a tragedy, like you just mentioned, any kind of false flag or any kind of real event. I think they'll both cave in and get on board with it. And you said, you just said you spoke to Ted Cruz about this, and he has that bill that he wants to push to try to prevent that. Short of him, do you see anybody else inside the system who may be able to stop this?
No, because it doesn't matter. So yeah, I'll give you a quick background on this. I've been close to politics for 30 years. My stepmother was, I'm a libertarian, but my stepmother is a Republican. She started out as a precinct captain in Broward County, Florida, and she ended up the co-chair of the Republican National Committee from 2012 to 2016, and she was Trump's ambassador to Costa Rica. I have seen the political process up close from the lowest level to the highest level. I stopped voting in 2018. There is a 0% chance of a political solution. And I want to write an article about it, because here's why. These elections, it doesn't even matter who the candidates are at this point. The elections are run by get out the vote campaigns that happened the last week. And the determinant of who wins the get out the vote campaign is who has the better big data and AI system to do targeting. And in this instance, it's the Democrat Party, hands down, and as it has been since 2008, and the Republican Party has atrophied even more from there. But when you consider that 2/3 of Americans can't identify the three branches of government, you know, us on this call, we can have deep conversations until 3 o'clock in the morning about political philosophy and all this other stuff. We're dealing with a situation where the overwhelming majority of American voters don't have a fundamental idea of how government works.
Right.
So the way to get out the vote campaigns is going to be, they're going to do targeting to nursing homes and say, unless you vote for this candidate, you're going to get thrown out on the streets. And those people vote as much as the high information voters. And we have, in general, as citizenry, we are zero to low information voters. Well, you can't win based on good candidates. There's no Mr. Smith goes to Washington anymore. This is late stage collapse. I mean, obviously you'd say Rand Paul, Thomas Massey, and everything else. And I love those guys, but at the same time, like, what have they done their entire careers? They're in an unwinnable situation. So I pushed this, and people were very uncomfortable. People were uncomfortable with this bank run concept. And bank run might not even be the right name, but you know, I went with it. And I pushed Vivek on it and everything else, even the libertarian candidates. I didn't debate Republican candidates, I debated libertarian candidates. And early on, they're like, oh, this is too extreme. And I'm like, their position is end the Fed. Okay, tell me how you're gonna end the Fed. You're gonna have control of Congress? Like, let's be practical about this. If we wanna end the Fed, we can get 2 or 3% of the population to stop using the money. It's a complete non-compliance civil disobedience play. And you don't need 50% plus one of the percent of the population to do it. You need a small percentage because of how over-leveraged and weak the system is. I believe thoroughly, and by the way, when I say this, I'm not saying this is high probability, nor is this a utopian solution. All I'm offering is something that buys us enough time to not get forced into CBDC, because in my opinion, CBDCs are the single biggest threat to human liberty. And once they're in place, you get immediately thereafter social credit scores, UBIs, vaccine passports, digital IDs, and then it's over. So that's kind of the way I've come to where I am. And early on, people thought I was nuts. Then the libertarian candidates came around. And then Jeffrey, actually, the first presentation I ever made of my book was at Porkfest at the Brownstone tent. And Jeffrey got it immediately. Immediately. He said, wow, I thought I knew about CBDCs. We should make this a priority at Brownstone. And now I'm telling Jeffrey, we had a call the other day. I said, guys, this is it. If I'm wrong on the 6 months, I better be wrong on the 6 months, because even if I'm right about the 6 months, I don't even see how we can mobilize enough. But I'm going to put every ounce of my being into trying to do that. But even if we had 2 years, 3 years, the reason that I think that they're going to do it before the election is quite simply, there's the risk that Biden loses. So they need to put this in place. There's already an executive order. They can't risk it getting kind of mucked up. Not that I think it would anyway. I think Trump would end up cowering in an emergency as well. But so I see no political prospects here. This is all radical noncompliance. I'm completely out of politics. This is our last chance.
Sure. Well, you know, the few politicians that are giving lip service to denouncing the CBDC, I think are doing so because they know they're not popular. So they're trying to score political points now, you know, and perhaps save face after the fact. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, quite a few politicians have shared that sentiment that they want to ban the CBDC, including Trump, who, you know, he said a lot of things. He said he wanted to investigate 9/11. He said he wanted to release the last of the JFK files. He wanted to free Julian Assange. You know, none of that happened. And also, look what happened when they banned drugs. You know, it only escalated drug trade. The CIA started flying it in and ended up creating a racket and a pharmaceutical monopoly. You know, so if history is any indicator. So on those lines here, I know we were just kind of talking about solutions. You mentioned the bank run there. 98% of the global economy's central banks are said to be either researching, piloting, or already deploying a CBDC. And 131 countries around the globe, according to the Atlantic Council. And these are major economies, right? Such as Russia. Just a couple of days ago, the Bank of Japan launched its CBDC API sandbox. And in March, you know, you already said this, but Jerome Powell, you know, said that the CBDC wouldn't be built into the U.S. And the Fed isn't close to any digital dollar recommendation. Of course, I don't believe any politicians at this point. Maybe DeSantis is somewhat authentic, you know, but I don't know. I don't even know if we could trust him. We should probably also mention that there's a large scale push for digital IDs around the world, right? Which provides the framework for CBDCs. And, you know, every time they talk about preserving privacy, there's always like other regulations involved with like know your customer, the anti-money laundering, stuff like that, which seem to in many ways do the exact opposite of, you know, preserving privacy. So it's clear that things are escalating. In my book, you know, I mentioned that I'm sure it's nowhere as expansive as yours is. It's kind of a shorter ebook, but the CBDC train has left the station, you know, and there really isn't any way to reverse course now for central banks digital currencies. But with all that said, like, what do you recommend is the most effective way for people to prepare for CBDCs and this oncoming economic shift?
I mean, look, this is a country that, you know, we had a Revolutionary War over 3% tax. I refuse to accept that CBDCs are inevitable. And because once they're there, it's as simple as this is a loss of free will, because once they're there, there's a longer arc I could go on this, but you know, it's your social credit score is going to be tied to your CBDC, which essentially means you have technocrats defining what your behavior is, what your thoughts and actions are. It's literally the end of free will. So sure. There should be no plan B on this. And what's been challenging for me is I've spent on really frustrated for the last 2 months trying to get people within crypto to identify the problem instead of fighting amongst themselves and to understand the severity of the threat. So let me tell you what I'll give you a preview of what I'm going to say next week. One, we can beat this, but what it's going to require is the development of open source multi-coin crypto wallets that are as easy to use. It has to be boomer friendly. If it's not as easy for them to use as Venmo or Apple Pay or Google Pay, because nothing like that really exists. The user experiences have not really gotten there. Open source multi-coin crypto wallet and an open source point of sale system that can handle multiple cryptos and can handle, you know, people being able to log gold back, silver, so on and so forth. So in other words, we need open source products for merchants and consumers that are at the same level of ease of use as what's available through traditional finance. And it has to be a multi-coin approach. So I'm going to push for that. I'm already talking to some designers and everything. I don't have funding for it. Like in my pitch on this is, guys, if we don't fund this and have it work for multiple coins, this entire segment, this sector, crypto as an asset class is done, right? Because at the end of the day, if you're already having to register your crypto, how many people are going to use crypto if there's a criminal penalty for not reporting it and KYCing it? I mean, realistically, what kind of adoption do we think we're really going to get? This is an all or nothing. This is, we do this now or it's over. So I'm saying I'm going all in for the next 6 months or however long it takes, but especially in light of the developments of the last 2 weeks on this approach. I will say, so since I exited fiat in 2019, I was 90-10 crypto, 10% gold and silver, and now I'm 50-50. Because I'm losing confidence in the sector. And the main reason I'm losing confidence is because of our own complacency, our own infighting, and looking at the progression. I mean, I'm a tech entrepreneur, and I'm looking at this, I'm like, we've got a bunch of people just sitting around, not even looking at who the other market competitors are. And their competitors are the ones that already have 100% market share, and they have control, and they have the state to back them up. Right? Like, we should have absolute urgency around this. People should be having hackathons around how can we build the best wallet, right? And they're not. They're trading NFTs. They're selling meme coins on 20x leverage on exchanges with stimulus money they got from COVID, right? This is a dire. So unless all of this comes together. So I'm doing these workshops across the country based on my book, but like the first 2 hours is, this is what the state of CBDCs, this is the state of CBDCs, this is the state of the surveillance state, this is the UNWEF, this is what their game plan is, this is what 2030 looks like, this is the default if we don't do anything, right? And then the last half is, I'm giving them a self-custody wallet, I'm giving them a gold back. People love gold backs. Gold backs might turn out to be, and I'm sure you're probably familiar with them, but that might turn out to be a great way to accelerate people getting into self-custody alternatives. And then a silver round, and I'm going around the country and I'm doing as many of these as I can, and I need as much help as possible because I've got hundreds of people that have already filled out my form. So the challenge with this is how to get the logistics and try to find somebody that can get a venue in their local area that's cost effective and everything else. And so, like, I'm fully committed to doing that. Ultimately, there will be an online version of it to be able to scale, and my theory is this, right? So we can't stop the fact that there's going to be some false flag or actual emergency event. We can't stop the fact that the reaction is going to be fear. The only shot we've got is having an alternative solution at the time of that emergency that looks compelling to people in that state and frame of mind. So all of this is build up to try to get to that point. So I'm not saying it's a high probability, but if we unify around this open source wallet and point of sale system, and we educated some first adopters on doing this, we have a shot. It's not zero, and I will take not zero. I would take anything to stop the level of digital tyranny we will be stuck with if we're not successful here.
Yeah, so I hopefully I didn't miss misrepresent myself. I'm certainly not a doom and gloomer, but as you mentioned, you know, a large majority of the public seems to, you know, eat crayons and not pay attention to even the basics of what's going on within politics, you know? So I guess that's a little discouraging for me. And maybe that's why I feel like, you know, the train has left the station. Like, how do we prepare? But I'm right there with you. I could tell by the urgency in your voice that this is something that's truly important, not just for the crypto community, but for humanity as a whole. And I don't want to speak for Matt, but, you know, I think we're here to help as much as we can. So certainly stay in touch with us. And yeah, those memes, like, hey, shoot them at me, man. I'd be happy to create something just to get some visuals out there. Now, I do think we're going to have to steal your phrase there of DEF CON 1. I think we might have to put that into the title of this show. I don't know how you feel about that, Matt, but it does seem...
I love it.
It definitely seems urgent. And, you know, there's that old Noam Chomsky quote, the general population doesn't know what's happening and doesn't even know that it doesn't know. And to a certain degree, that almost feels like it applies to the crypto community right now. You know, they're so busy gamifying everything and I guess, you know, colluding with these ETFs and BlackRock and stock marketing, the whole crypto exchange and all that stuff. I mean, it's certainly strayed far from its original intent. And there's no debating that.
All right, free thinkers, this episode is nearing the end. We wanted to take this time to remind you, if you found value in this conversation, please consider hitting that like button and subscribing to the Free Thought Project podcast on your preferred platform of choice. It's an easy, no-cost way to support us and ensure you never miss an episode. Also, the Free Thought Project operates primarily on the generosity of our listeners. If you believe in our mission and support our cause, please consider donating or subscribing by going to the membership tab at the top of our website. Your contributions ensure we are able to continue our important work, having these important conversations, and your donations help us do just that. Lastly, if you're part of an organization or own a business that aligns with our mission and values, we are currently inviting sponsorships for our podcast. This is a fantastic opportunity to promote your product or make your brand visible to our engaged audience while supporting meaningful discourse. Thank you for your support, Freethinkers, and as always, thank you for listening.
We are getting low here on time. You know, there's so much more to talk about. I wanted to get into the stable coins a little bit. CBDCs, you know, being the world reserve currency. There's more to talk about. So I guess we'll have to have you on next time. But I did see that you were speaking in the Bay Area in a couple weeks at an event hosted by the Liberty Forum of Silicon Valley on May 11th for a workshop in San Jose. That's not too far from me. It's about a couple hours away. I'm in Sacramento. I'm in the center of the state with the rest of the clowns out here. But feel free to talk about that or any other events or conferences you'll be speaking at and anything you're working on. And definitely share with people where they could find you and follow more of your work.
Sure. So yeah, on May the 11th at 9 a.m., I have my next four-hour workshop, which is what I described earlier, where I'm educating people on the threats and everybody walks out of there with self-custody crypto, a gold back, and some silver. I have events staggered throughout the year. So I'm going to be at Porkfest at the end of June. I'll be giving multiple, you know, talks there. I'm going to be at the Brownstone Institute annual event in October. And then I am trying to schedule as many of these workshops as I can. So if you know, I thought the fact that it's San Jose, that was surprising to me. I actually went out to the Liberty Forum of Silicon Valley. They had 350 people show up for my talk. I sold out of books. They were stunned. They've never sold that many books. And that was really surprising to me. And right. So anybody who's listening to this, I mean, if you're interested in this idea, go to day2024.com. There's a attend a workshop tab and you can fill out your contact information. And then I'll reach out to you because right now what I'm trying to do is take the hundreds of leads that I have of people that want workshops. And I'm trying to figure out what the precise location should be to have some of these. So I am fully committed to doing that. And then I will continue to do, you know, I want to get on as many podcasts as possible, again, as quickly as possible, because DEF CON 1 is it. I mean, I've been urgent about this since I wrote the book and decided to run for president, but I'm telling you in the last 2 weeks, like, this is it. So I don't want to be sitting here saying, gee, I wish I would have been more forceful. So that's why DEFCON 1 is, what I'm going to call my next episode as well, because it's literally the truth. And I don't know how many more friends I have that are imprisoned and have their businesses destroyed by the government because of cryptocurrency. When I'm traveling to different places, this idea is foreign, right? They might think, oh, this guy's like, well, these sound like conspiracy theories. I'm like, no, my actual friends are in prison. And these are hardcore liberty people that were providing voluntary alternatives that were nonviolent, that people were happy to use. And so it's real. So I appreciate your willingness to help. And I just, as the liberty community is fragmented. And I really hope we can get some unity around this, because the Department of Justice is going after liberty crypto people, and they want to implement something that is antithetical to freedom as you could possibly imagine.
Well, it reminds me of that. I don't even know. I guess it's a quote. First they came for the freedom lovers, the crypto enthusiasts. And nobody said anything. And that it's all too familiar. And the course of history is just repeating itself once again. But Aaron's website and Twitter account will be in the caption of the podcast, guys. So definitely follow Aaron and keep up with his important work. I'm definitely going to connect you as well to Derek Bros and Ryan Christian over at the Last American Vagabond. Both of those guys are good friends. They're certainly knee deep in this Agenda 2030 crypto digital ID CBDC world as well. So maybe they could help amplify your message and get you on their shows sometime soon. But Aaron, let's truly hope that people take heed and hear us when we say that there are huge financial changes on the horizon, and the world is headed towards some dark and challenging times. But the one thing we can do is prepare. So now is the time. So thank you for coming on our show and being a voice of reason for speaking about many of these complex and somewhat harrowing issues, and for your dedication to not only the free exchange of value through the cryptocurrencies, but your passionate dedication to freedom and liberty for all people. So thank you, brother. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.